focus of geopolitics has been shifting from Western Europe towards Southeast Asia, and China stands to gain the most from that shift. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton speaks with a China analyst, someone who has studied how China's youth, not American millennials, may drive the 21st century agenda. That conversation starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening. Geopolitically, even just economically, few subjects intrigue investors, analysts, and business leaders alike, like China. So much influence is being seen that the White House administration is suddenly reconsidering its participation in the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. It's a counterweight to China's stronger-than-ever global position. The America First policies from the White House, as well as climate change obstructionism, have helped put China in a global leadership position. The use of soft power is being rolled out at a remarkable rate in Asia as well as Africa. Things as different as freshwater wells for villagers to entire ports and rail lines. And at the fore of this push is young China. Similar in age to millennials in America, the Chinese refer to the cohort as the restless generation.
China is saying, and the young people are watching their country announce to the region that they are building their relationships in concrete and steel, not to last every 4 years,
right,
but to last decades and generations.
Right.
That's a big announcement, not just for the world, but also for the Chinese people.
Our next guest is an expert in China from his in-country studies during his Columbia University years to his founding of the Young China Global Group think tank in New York. Here's our chat about his new book, Young China.
Zach Dykewald, I'm the author of Young China, How the Restless Generation Will Change Their Country and the World.
Zach, thank you for your time today. Let's start at the very, very beginning. What drew you to China? And then we'll get into your first impressions after you got your feet on the ground.
You know, as bizarre as this sounds, it was an interest in the future. I was a big science fiction junkie growing up. So when I was faced with the question of where do I study abroad as a Columbia student, I figured I could go to Europe and study history, or I could go to China and see where everyone was saying the future was happening.
That's fascinating. And what were your first impressions?
Yeah, so I first landed in Hong Kong. And Hong Kong, as most people will tell you, is very different than mainland China. My first steps into mainland China, I write about a little bit in the first chapter. And it was different than what everyone had described to me. In fact, that was a big motivation to write the book. The China I had experienced was different than what everyone had described to me. And in part, that was because everyone described to me a sort of terrifying view of China. You know, these people who were rough, who were not kind, who were impolite, who were in the example I have in the book is my Chinese godfather warned me about organ-stealing prostitutes, which is a terrifying thing to put in someone's head the first time they enter a country.
Yeah, no kidding. That would leave a mark, I have to say.
Right, absolutely.
And subtitle of the book is How the Restless Generation Will Change Their Country and the World. Is a working definition of the restless generation, can we say millennials, or is that not correlative?
I typically talk about millennials when I do discuss it with a Western audience, but China does not have the concept of millennials the same way that we have. China usually defines its generations on the decade. They call it Baling Ho, Joling Ho, so the generation born after 80, the generation born after 90. Mm. This book focuses in particular on the generation born after 90, my peer generation in China.
Okay.
But I do also talk about millennials more normatively.
Okay, cool. We'll come back to that in just a second because I'm a novice and I've never been to China, but I've always heard about the one-child policy. And that always seemed to me like an almost existential generation-defining situation, politically speaking and sociologically speaking. Am I overstretching with that one-child thing?
No, not at all. Actually, the 4-2-1 crisis and China's demographic issues are part of what defines this restless generation. You know, it used to be in China that there were a lot of young people and very few old people. As recently as 1950, there was about 6 kids per family, and the average life expectancy was 36. Mm. So, you know, the older generation didn't retire. They died. Recently,
right,
there's been a massive longevity revolution. And on top of that, you have the one-child policy. So right now, you have 4 grandparents for every 2 parents for every 1 child. We call this young generation the little emperor generation. We expect with the more attention that they're getting from the older generations that they're going to be spoiled. But what I found and what everyone described to me while I was in China was, while they did receive more attention, it also led to a tremendous amount of pressure. pressure to perform well in school, pressure to secure a position in a great college, pressure to get married, pressure to have children, pressure to have a great job, and hopefully be able to support the family later in life, as is the tradition in China.
You know, just personal front page, I have an only child, and she is by far a minority situation. So do the single children in China kind of feel more of esprit de corps as a generation?
I mean, absolutely. This is one of the bizarre aspects of this young generation in China. So single children generation in China is about 400 million people. This, you know, five times larger than the millennial generation in the United States, and actually more than the entire population of the U.S. and Canada combined. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't think that you'd be able to speak normatively about this young generation. But actually, because they have had so many shared experiences, because sort of the project of childhood in China is so different and so competition-driven and study-driven, there definitely is a sort of common spirit and a common experience that this young generation describes, no matter where you are in China. You know, I've been to all of the provinces at this point. I've talked to people just about every corner of the country, and they all describe a similar growing up experience and a similar set of dreams and a striving.
Your book touches on so many subjects. You point out that it's a foodie nation, a foodie generation, and there's a sexual revolution. I wonder if we could talk about the restless generation's take on the West.
The young generation has a major divide with the older generation on their view of the West. If you were born in the 1960s and 70s in China, you had no experience of the outside world. You were born behind a cultural wall. Your only real experience of America and the West was slogans, you know, surpass America, catch up with England. That was it. One of my friends describes his parents in their home village. Their neighbors were the most popular because they had a 12-month calendar tacked up on the wall of their hut. It was the fields of Europe, you know, but those 12 pictures were the only view of the outside world. This young generation is much different. They've grown up with the internet. They've grown up watching our TV shows. They've grown up watching our movies. You know, I have friends who can quote Barney from How I Met Your Mother and Martin Luther King Jr. They have an awareness of the West, compounded by the fact that a lot of them are actually traveling abroad right now. Two-thirds of all passport holders in China are under the age of 35. So their opinions of the West are actually far more informed than the older generation. And what's so interesting about this younger generation is they, you know, the increased exposure they have with the West, it actually makes them feel that, you know, their country, they have things to be proud of as well. The older generation used to think of America as a city on a hill, a goal that China might strive towards. This young generation is increasingly proud of their country, is increasingly proud of their Chinese identity. And that's not to say that they do not like the West. One in three students studying abroad in the United States right now are actually from China.
You know, you're the founding CEO of the Young China Global Group, and that's going to be my last question. But my penultimate question is a little more macro. It may not be, this is asking you to give me some expertise from your knowledge of the market. And what is the second Silk Road with this generation, the effort for China to create a new trade route from China all the way through into Western Europe, including Africa and the Middle East? Is that something that is on the mind of the youngers?
It's an excellent question, because it's one of the most important infrastructure and economic and political moments of our time. China politically often leads from an economic point of view. So they've created what's known as the Belt and Road Initiative, which includes around 68 different countries in the Asia extended region. So not just, you know, Southeast Asia, Thailand, Singapore, the places you might expect, but also all the way to Kenya, all the way to Europe. It's five major infrastructure projects that's building ports, that's building railway, that's building roads, connecting all of Asia extended primarily to China. So it's an interesting moment, particularly as the United States is sort of shrinking away from the Asian region, and where every 4 years it looks like our politics might change, you know, particularly with the tearing up of the TPP. A lot of people, a lot of countries in Asia feel like they can't rely on the United States for the long term quite in the same way that they maybe used to. China is saying, and the young people are watching their country announce to the region, that they are building their relationships in concrete and steel, not to last every 4 years,
right,
but to last decades and generations.
Right.
That's a big announcement, not just for the world, but also for the Chinese people. They're watching their country assume a position of global leadership, which is new for China.
We're speaking with Zach Dichtwald. He's the author of the new revelatory book called Young China, How the Restless Generation Will Change Their Country and the World. I mentioned that you're also CEO and founding partner of the Young China Global Group. Tell us what that group does.
So we are a think tank and advisory. It's basically me and a variety of consultants spread out across China, continuing to do the research, bridging the knowledge from China to the West. So we work with companies and governments, helping them understand the young generation in China. We also are beginning to work with Chinese companies, helping them to understand the young generation in the United States. So it's understanding the global millennial mindset.
Well, you're in a dynamic space. Congratulations on finding it.
Oh, yeah, it's a blast. I mean, it's a dream come true.
Zach, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Zach Dichtwald, author of Young China and the founding CEO of the Young China Global Group think tank in New York. Zach spends a third of each year living, touring, and researching in China. For a link to his book and other sources about this rather fascinating contemporary topic, please go to KGORadio.com. There you will find a story that coincides with this week's show, and inside it are all of our sourcing links. Coming up after the break, a dive into a new business climate study from JP Morgan Chase. Just how confident are small and medium U.S. businesses for 2018? That and an update on SpaceX's effort to provide broadband internet via a network of thousands of small satellites. That's next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please stick around.